And that sound means it's time for History Matters, taking a look back at this week in history with the one and only Scott Washington, historian extraordinaire, who joins us here in the studio. How are you?
Well, doing good, Aaron. And, you know, I wish folks could actually see you in action. It's like juggling plates on poles. The way you do it, you make the difficult look easy. It's just amazing.
The problem is, if people could see me in action, I'd actually have to dress up to do this job. The nice thing about radio is you can just wear whatever you want.
What?
Pajamas,
that
I'm good.
That tuxedo you're wearing now?
It's actually just a t-shirt that looks like a tuxedo. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, well,
get you into every wedding.
You know, I think this is a good day to make a comment about, you know, what you do is so extraordinary, because this is the week that in 1918, a young kid was born with the name of Paul, September 4th, 1918, and he later goes on to become a very influential person in radio, whose tagline was, "And now for the rest of the story," and his name was Paul Harvey.
Yep.
And now you know
the rest of the story.
So,
there you go.
And it seems like the interesting tidbits of history this week certainly fit this profile of now you know the rest of the story. Like, for instance, this one. Now, this is on
Before we get to that,
right.
His 100th birthday is today. Then.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
1918.
Right. My gosh.
Yeah.
Yes.
One of my favorite two of my favorite books growing up, not written by him, but written by his son, as it turned out. Two collected books of the rest of the story stories.
Oh,
yeah,
I love
they were
those.
Super fun.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to dedicate this program, I think, today
to Paul Harvey.
Yeah, because he helped bring history alive the way that this show does in so many good ways.
Okay, carry on.
All right,
yeah,
here's a good one. Oh, I'm excited about this one. September 4th, 1893, there's a young woman in England, and she writes a letter to a friend.
Oh, you're going to do all of these in the rest
yes,
of the story?
Yes,
all right,
exactly.
I'm just going to step back and, no, this is going to be fun
and,
now.
And so the character she describes are these furry little animals, and there's this farmer that's chasing them, and she later expands this letter into a book, which was later rejected by several publishers. That tale that she describes in this letter was, of course, that of Peter Rabbit and Mr. McGregor and Flopsy, Mopsy, and Cottontail, and, of course, Peter, and that author was Beatrix Potter. And now you know the rest of the story. But, you know, that's and there's some other things that are really interesting. I did not know that there were Spanish ships that attacked North Carolina. This is something I had missed somewhere in my history. This goes back to 1740s when, of course, the Americas looked much more like Europe. We had Spain, we had England, we had France. And so there was friction with the Spanish.
This is the part of U.S. history class that we gloss over
yes,
really quick
exactly.
in order to get to the revolution.
So
it's all of this stuff before the revolution
That's
and
right.
after World War II. Nobody ever covers this in history
That's
class.
Right.
It's like Pilgrim's American Revolution straight into the Constitution.
Yeah.
Then Lincoln got elected.
So if you're stuck in traffic listening to this, you'll go, Spain? We had Spanish ships attack North Carolina? Yes, we did. 1748. And they actually attack the town of Brunswick. Their sailors, the people flee the town, so they're ransacking the town.
Oh, they were just looking for an excuse.
And luckily, the Carolina Tar Heels come back and beat the stuffing out of them. And one of the they're so afraid that the Spanish accidentally blow up one of their two ships. But here is the catch. They salvage, the guy who led the Tar Heels, he helped salvage the ship, the contents are sold, and they helped build the construction of St. Philip's Church in Brunswick and St. James Church in Wilmington.
Wow.
Which is kind of an amazing thing. And now, here is something that I don't
And
think,
now you know
yeah, the rest of the story.
Yes, yeah, exactly. They're going to end it every time.
Boy, I'm going to be sweating it out every time, seeing if we can find this.
But I'm not letting this go. This is a great way to do this.
All right. This is one that's really fun. You might say, what do these three people have in common? Martin Luther King Jr., Warren Buffett, and John Wayne. Now, I'm going to tell you why.
Three people who have never been in my kitchen.
It goes back to a date. Well, it could be. We could keep going that way.
It's a Cheers reference, by the way, in case you're wondering where that came from.
In 1833, when a publisher of the New York Sun hires this 10-year-old boy called Barney Flaherty to sell newspapers. And so that becomes, this date, September 4th, becomes National Newspaper Carrier Day. And what those three people had in common, I mentioned, Martin Luther King Jr., Warren Buffett, and John Wayne, they all delivered newspapers.
Newspapers.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Isn't that interesting? So there, and now you know the rest of the story.
Yeah. Hey. One of my favorite moments, and did you ever see the movie Saving Mr. Banks with Tom Hanks?
Oh,
and
yes.
Yeah, the monologue at the end where Walt Disney is talking about how he was a newspaper carrier for his father.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's another one we can add to the list. Yeah, exactly. And now we know,
the
more.
Rest of it. Yeah. And now you know the end of that movie. Sorry, everyone. Now, it's not a spoiler. It's fine. It's fine.
Hear that. Okay. Now, here's one. We all know Labor Day was Monday, September 3rd. Well, the advocacy for that began in the 19th century with trade unions and labor movements. But in Oregon, actually was the first state to make it an official state holiday. Mm-hmm. But it comes about because in 1894, there's the United States Army and the United States Marshal Service were engaged in the Pullman strike of 1894, and strikers die. And so Congress unanimously voted to approve legislation to make Labor Day a national holiday, and President Grover Cleveland signed it into law 6 days after the end of the strike. All United States states, the District of Columbia, and United States territories have made Labor Day a statutory holiday.
That was an interesting story. We were looking at Labor Day. We were actually putting together Labor Day trivia for the day that we were airing music all day. And I discovered that story and the fact that just the whole idea of Labor Day like came into being very quickly. Like it was the 1880s, I think people even came up with the idea. And within 10 years, it's a national holiday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just really.
I did not know that at all.
No. Yeah. But now we know
the rest of the story. Yeah.
I hope I can keep this going. All right. Here's one. On September 9th, 1789, the House of Representatives from the fledgling new Congress under the new Constitution recommends the adoption by the states of amendments that, and then 2 weeks later, the Senate, they make changes, and the final 12 are passed by Congress on September 25th. But it's this date when they actually, the House recommends these, and they are, the language is what becomes some of the issues, and so they actually become much more terse. And of course, we know that one of the big roles in that happening at all was because North Carolina in Hillsborough in 1788, one of the last states to consider ratification of the Constitution, actually voted to postpone that until Congress took up this issue, and that really was a galvanizing force for why we have what we call the Bill of Rights.
Yep.
And now
you know the rest of the story. Okay. Well, you know almost the rest of the story
because
we didn't talk about the 27th Amendment, which is the 11th of the 12 amendments
that
eventually gets ratified in like 1992.
That's right.
After a grad student from Texas picked up the ball again and got ratified.
C plus on his paper because they said, oh, that's ridiculous. Until he took it and the Supreme Court said, no, the amendment was still open, got enough states to ratify it. And that was about
the
representatives of Congress could not raise their pay until the next election had occurred.
That C plus makes sense because the plus is an addition sign and the C stands for Constitution. So the professor's encouraging him to go out and add to the Constitution.
I'm sure that's what he thought, too.
Exactly what he thought.
Well, sometimes that I'll prove you wrong kind of thing works well, too. Here's another one. Now, I'm going to happens on September 9th as well. 1890, there's a young boy is born. His middle name is David, but they give him the unlikely name of Harland. Not Harley, but Harland as the first name. And then as he grows up, he gets into the restaurant business and has really kind of failure after failure. Finally gets his first Social Security check. And instead of saying, well, I'm going to peacefully settle down, no. He starts yet another business. This one would be a little more successful. We know it today as Kentucky Fried Chicken, and Harlan David Sanders, we know better as Colonel Sanders. And now you know
the rest of the story. Fun fact, I mentioned those two Paul Harvey books that I read incessantly growing up.
Yeah.
You have already hit on two of the stories that were in those books in the 10 minutes that we've been talking now. And Colonel Sanders is one of them.
That's amazing.
Because that is a fun story about a guy who just like, he starts business after business and he fails and he fails and he fails and he's a failure. And then he's 60 something.
Right.
And he's like, I'll give it one more shot. And then he becomes this legend.
It's a testimony to second acts, and I really think that's a great thing. Here's another one, and I just think this is just an interesting one. 1757, we're kind of casting back, September 6, 1757, a young guy in France is born, and he grows up. He attends a dinner in 1775 where British royalty are bad-mouthing what's happening here in the colonies. And it's a turning point for him. And he knows where he's going to go. So he comes to the United States, becomes like the best friend of George Washington. And it's almost like a father-son relationship, and helps in a major way in the Revolutionary War. His name is Marquis de Lafayette, and becomes a major general, the youngest. But here's the really interesting thing. Of course, we know the war is won, thank goodness for Lafayette and the French. He goes back and helps launch the French Revolution.
Oh, yeah. he was a big revolutionary,
I think that's one of the more interesting stories to come out of that. It wasn't just us. This helped inspire other people to say, wait a minute, we've just helped the colonies, and how inspiring is that? Why shouldn't we bring that somewhere else? It was a little more uneven in France, but still, that's kind of an interesting story that,
The rest of the story.
Okay,
there's a lot of revolutionaries. There was Lafayette. David Diggs played him in the musical, so did a very good job there. Thomas Paine,
right?
Another American revolutionary who then made his way over to France and participated there. Jefferson, to an extent, because he was in France.
We could say
right before the revolution broke.
Right,
we
could say Hamilton too. I mean, he's technically comes from the Caribbean and comes.
Oh, Hamilton is rolling over in his grave that you just associated him with the French Revolution, though.
Not with the French Revolution, but somebody who's abroad is inspired, comes to the United States. But it wasn't because
he's
going to
break out of his coffin with two names on his list: Aaron Burr and you.
Well, I hope it's to come sing, and we'll welcome him anytime. All right, now this one is this one is kind of one that should have worked, and the reason it doesn't
this is already an auspicious beginning.
It is. Well, it's September 4th, 1957. Now, what's being advertised is the best. It has all the latest gimshaws and upgrades. It should be.
Did it have doodads?
Doodads.
Doodads.
Yes, it does have doodads.
Gimshaws and doodads.
It's actually named after the founder of the company, the son of the founder. So it looks like this is a no-brainer. This is going to be a sure win. And yet it becomes the greatest flop in automotive history that we know as the Edsel. Overpriced, unattractive. In fact, when they were finally ending the release in 1960, they were finally offering them for as low as $400.
What did they start offering them for? Because wasn't this like an upscale car, too?
Yes.
Like the idea was that this was like impress your friends and neighbors?
Well, it comes out in 1959, and you look at it and you go, yeah, that kind of looks like a kind of, even brand new, kind of looked like, kind of already seen it. Well, apparently that's what the public thought, too.
All right. As some of those cars, like, what's the name of that? Isn't it just called the Cube, that just like a weird kind of boxy-shaped car that you see driving around?
Yes.
Like, that's a car that you might look at and think, oh, that's a weird-looking car, and if you were more in line to buy, like, a typical shaped car, then you wouldn't go for that. But people do go for that, and they buy them, and they drive them around them, and it's good. Edsel, just nobody went for it at all.
No. But I'm going to tell you one, when you said boxy car, that, I think we think of the Volvo in Sweden.
Right.
It's kind of a boxy car. Mm-hmm. Well, here is a fascinating tidbit that comes up this week. 1967, on September 3rd at 6 a.m. Now, I can't even imagine how you would do this. Everybody Swedish drivers stop driving on the left-hand side of the road and begin driving on the right.
Hmm.
And I'm thinking, yeah, but wasn't the steering wheel on the other side?
Right.
And this would have.
Why would you even make that switch if you've been? It can't be a safety thing because people for the next like several months are going to be getting used to it.
That's the part that I don't quite understand either, how they did it. But apparently the Swedes did, and they still made boxy cars.
There you go.
After that, so.
All right. Speaking with Scott Washington, History Matters. We've got time for one more. What do you got?
All right.
And we've got to do it in rest of the story mode so that we can bring it all full circle. So
okay,
this has
got to
be a story with a punchline here.
Right. All right, a story with a punchline. All right, I'm going to say.
Oh, if you don't have.
Oh
one.
Yeah, I got
okay.
one. Here, I got
all right,
one.
Okay, all right,
okay. U.S. president goes on a trip. It's actually a hunting expedition. Theodore Roosevelt, turn of the century, and he goes out into the wilderness, and so he really wants to hunt a bear. Now, this was the time when these were manly pursuits to do this. Of course, we look aghast at this today. But when he gets to his camp, and what have they done? They've tied up a bear cub to a tree, and he absolutely refuses. Well, a cartoonist hears about this for the Washington Post and draws this wonderful cartoon of Teddy Roosevelt refusing to shoot this little bear cub. Now, here's the thing. That Berryman cartoon inspired this New York store owner named Morris Mitchum to create a toy based on that kids still play with today that we know as
the teddy bear.
And now you know the rest of the story.
There you go. It's a good way to come full circle.
Well, hats off to Paul Harvey. What a great way to celebrate these great stories that keep us all interested in going, oh, isn't history interesting? And that's why history matters.
Happy 100th birthday, Paul Harvey. History Matters. Scott Washington, thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron.